So I will talk about computer-assisted proofs of the existence of high-period fixed points in the Hainaut map. Sheldon already told you a little bit about the importance of those fixed points for mathematical theorems. And of course, somehow we have to prove that they're actually there. So I will give a short motivation why we do this. Then I'll go over the mathematical theorems we use. And we'll conclude with actual applications of fixed points in various Hainaut-like maps that we have proven to exist. So the problem is simply to find a fixed point of a certain map from Rn to Rn. Or equivalently, we can find the zeros of f minus x. And well, once we know those points, we can make certain statements about the dynamics of the system. So what's so hard about this? Well, it should be easy to find a fixed point. You just stick it in the function, and if it's the same afterwards, well, then it was a fixed point, right? The problem is, numerically, that doesn't quite work. We can produce, like, for example, fake fixed points that are not really fixed points, but because of our precision, they come out to look like fixed points. For example, if you take this simple map here, if you just stick in something like 1 or 2 or 10, it'll come out to be 10 again, because the little part we add just gets lost due to loss of precision. Still, we all know that 10 is certainly not a fixed point of this map. A little more interesting example, maybe, is also the question what order a fixed point has, what period. And here we have an example that I stole from Sheldon. He did a few computations in a Hainaut map with these parameters. I'll get back to that. And what he did is he found these points, and he noticed, well, they seem to be fixed points under iterations. But the question is, what is the period? So you can see, if we start out just at this point, after 15 iterations, the last few digits change, but it still comes almost back. After 30 iterations, it comes completely back, and it just keeps jumping back and forth between those two values. Now the question is, are those digits real, or is it just floating point precision going off, and we actually have a period 15 or period 30 fixed point? So it turns out it's actually a period 15 fixed point, as we will prove later. And all we see is just fluctuations in the floating point numbers. So how do we prove the existence? Well, we can use our rigorous numerical methods, obviously. For example, we can use intervals or Taylor models. And then we have to use some mathematical results, some theorems that tell us that under certain circumstances we have fixed points. And obviously, the two have to be suited for each other. So we have to choose a theorem that can be used or applied to our rigorous methods. So the first one that we can use is the Schauder fixed point theorem. And that tells us that if we have a compact, non-empty, and convex set, and then a continuous map that maps it into itself, then we're guaranteed that there exists a fixed point in that set. Note that we don't have to have any assumptions on F, except that it's continuous. So that's a pretty powerful theorem. And down here is the cartoon for this. So you start out with your set K, and if F maps it to the new blue thing here, which is completely inside K, then we're done. We have a fixed point in there. Another theorem we use is the Miranda theorem. This one is basically the intermediate value theorem for higher dimensions. So what we do there is, what we need is a function, again continuous, and then we choose a box. And now if on each boundary of the box, on the one side, the corresponding component of F is negative, and on the other side it's positive. Then we, and that is true for all of those boundaries. So here in this cartoon, I drew it for two dimensions. Then we can guarantee that there is a zero in there. That's just what the theorem gives us. And with this, we can produce the corollary that we'll use for our fixed point. We simply apply it to our fixed point problem and show that this has a zero, g of x. And then obviously f of x has to have a fixed point. And if you do that, it turns out what we need is we start with a certain rectangle. And if this rectangle under f is mapped so that the top boundary is below the top boundary of the original one, and the lower boundary is above the lower boundary of the original one, but the left hand and the right hand side are stretched outwards, like this, then we know that we again have a fixed point in there. So this is very useful when we have hyperbolic fixed points, because obviously that's exactly what they do. They compress in one direction and they expand in the other direction. So if you can show this picture rigorously at a certain point, we already have our fixed point. So let's look at the map that we use. We just use the standard Hinault map. Normally, the parameters for the standard map are 1.4 and 0.3 for A and B. We use slightly different parameters. Don't ask me how we came up with those. That was Sheldon's fault. He just one day walked in and said, hey guys, look, if we do a slight variation on A, if we change it from 1.4 to 1.422, we find an interesting fixed point. And that is an attractive fixed point this time in this map. That means it just sucks everything in that's around it. And it seems to have period 15. That was the point I was showing you before, where we weren't actually quite sure if it's 15 or 30. But what was certain is it's attractive, because if you start almost anywhere and just keep iterating, you end up finding this point. So here's a picture, which you can't really see anymore because I used yellow. Good choice. So here's the point we're dealing with, and here, and all around the attractor, we find those 15 iterates. And well, now we have the free choice which one we want to look at, which point. We can choose any one of those fixed points. Obviously, if we show that one is a period 15 fixed point, then we also know that the others are. So how do we choose the one? Well, what we can do is we can choose one that turns out to be useful for us. So first, we have to get an estimate for the points. In this case, it's easy because it's attractive. We just start somewhere, take the origin, and just keep iterating until nothing changes anymore, up to floating point precision. That's how we get our candidate for the point. And then, because it's attractive, that already kind of yells at us, we should use the Schauder fixed point theorem, because it just attracts everything so that we get a contraction. Now, we have to choose our box smartly, and we can do that by going along the eigendirections at the alleged fixed point. And then we just look at this topologically conjugated map here, because we can always change the coordinate system if you want to look at it as a physicist. It doesn't matter in what coordinate system it's a fixed point. Once it's in one, it's also in all other coordinate systems. So the question is, how do we choose this eigenvector basis? And the idea is easy. We just use non-verified differential algebra expansions of the 15th iterate of the Hinault map. and we take our linearization M from there. Now, why can we do this non-verified? Well, we can choose whatever coordinate system we want. It doesn't have to be the eigenvectors. So as long as it's close enough and works for us, we're good. The one thing we have to do rigorously, though, is the inversion. Because once we go back, we have to go back really into our original coordinate system. We can't just somehow invert it and roughly go back. That doesn't work. So the only thing we do is we generate M from a DA expansion and then rigorously invert that map, that matrix, using interval methods. One observation that comes out of all this is that the eigenvalues of the linearization at that fixed point are somewhat unfortunate, because we have this one eigenvalue that's almost one in absolute value. That means we don't have much of a contraction there. And that means it'll be hard to beat the overestimation we will get when we actually do this. It would be nice if they were all this small, because then we can overestimate quite a bit and it doesn't matter, because the contraction just sucks it all up. All right, and what we want to do is, for the choice of which of the 15 points we use, we just choose one where this matrix is halfway well conditioned, and therefore we get almost orthogonal eigenvectors. It turns out that there actually is one of those points, and we just use that one because it makes it the fastest for us. So first we tried it with interval methods. We took, just to estimate how long that would take, we took one interval somewhere there around the fixed point that included the fixed point, and we just sent it to the map. And it turns out that this interval blows up by a factor of about 3,000 in each coordinate. That is simply due to the dependency problem of this map. If you remember, the Hinault map itself is quadratic, and we iterate that 15 times, so we end up with something like 2 to the 15th order or something. So that's a lot. And there we get a huge dependency problem. Now, using this number, just this blow-up, we want to map it back into the original box. It blows up by a factor of 3,000 in each coordinate, so we'll have to use a box that's at most 1/3,000th of the width of the original box. So using that, we can roughly estimate that we already need at least 10 million boxes to split up the original box, and at least 10 million boxes to actually achieve this goal. And so when we implement this, we just use a simple stack-based approach. That means we just put the first box on the stack, and then we just keep in a loop. We take the first box off the step, we map it. If it maps into the original box, fine, we just throw it away. If not, we start splitting it in both directions, so we get four new boxes, put them back on the stack, and start again, and we do that until the stack is empty. Hopefully that actually happens. If we ever map a box completely outside the original box, then we're in trouble, because then obviously we cannot map the original box into itself, because we just found a box that's not mapped into the original box. Fortunately, that doesn't happen. So if we run this, we notice a few disadvantages. Mostly, we suddenly need 300 million interval boxes. So if you remember, this first estimate we made with the 10 million was just based on the idea that we want boxes that in the end are as large as the original box, but we didn't say anything where they are mapped. And the problem is our fixed point there, you've seen that with a small contraction, it doesn't move the box by far in one direction. It just wiggles a little bit. So if the box then turns out to be still as large as the original box, there's only overlap. It's not completely inside. So that's why we need a huge number of interval boxes to actually complete this verification. And well, some statistics. This original box we had, you remember, we always split it in half if it didn't work. We had to do about 12 to 15 such splittings on average for the box to work. So we chopped it up into relatively small pieces, 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 5 times the original width. And unfortunately, that means we'd had to use higher precision. It didn't work with the regular floating point precision anymore, because the whole box is somewhere around 10 to the minus 20 in width. And then we had to chop it up into even smaller pieces and send it through our map. And when we don't do this in high precision, in this case we used 45 digits, if you use just the 15 digits we get from the floating point numbers, we would never complete, because at some point the boxes just wouldn't split anymore. The problem was that this whole procedure also takes up to 2 hours, which is really boring to sit there and watch your computer seemingly do nothing. So we switched over to Taylor models, and it turns out that works much better. We used only one single Taylor model, one single box. Well, it's two Taylor models in X and Y, but just one box. And also note the width difference. This one is 10 to the minus 5, and I forgot to mention here in the previous slide, we had about 10 to the minus 20 around the fixed point for the intervals. So we were able to use a much larger box, and this one Taylor model already just mapped into itself after the 15 iterations. The whole thing took less than a second. So this is really showing how we can get around this dependency problem when we use the Taylor models, because they don't care if we have this high order map, because they just don't suffer from this dependency. So finally, with this map, we concluded it is actually a period 15 fixed point, because all the time I sent it through the 15 iterations of the Hinault map. So now we can say with certainty, even though in floating point arithmetic it didn't look like a period 15 fixed point, it actually is. So that's good to know. Now another map we looked at is the area preserving Hinault map. We used these parameters here, which I believe are somewhat standard for this area preserving case. And again, Sheldon came up with a bunch of fixed points in there, which were, in this case, not attracting anymore, but hyperbolic. So we have to use a different method. Now, once again, yellow, good color. This fixed point here is the one we studied, and there's here, 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 here. They just go around like this in this area preserving map. And well, in this case, it's a period 21 fixed point, so we go even higher now. And well, we would like to show that it actually is a fixed point. So this time we use the Miranda theorem, since it's hyperbolic. It compresses and stretches. And it's, again, almost the same idea. We take this approximate fixed point, but this time, obviously, we can't just iterate it, because it would be stretched out in one direction and just go away from the fixed point once it falls into the unstable manifold. So instead of just iterating the fixed point, we set up a Newton iteration to get closer to what we think the fixed point is. And that worked pretty well. It converges, and we have our point to work with. The next thing we do is, again, set up the eigencoordinates, like just exactly the same way as before. And then we send a small box. In this case, small means about 10 to the minus 5 in width, around the fixed point through this map. And what we do next is we have to now do a little more work than before. Mapping into something is easy if something is a box, because then we can just easily, you know, take the interval enclosure of the thing we got and check if it's below and above the boundaries. That doesn't work anymore so easily if we actually have a Taylor model and we want to see if this Taylor model stretches to the left and the right of the box. So we actually need rigorous interval enclosures for the left boundary and the right boundary of this Taylor model. So we had to calculate those and then just test if actually this cartoon I showed is the case that happens. And here's the result of that. A successful verification looks like this. We have in blue the original box, red is the map Taylor model, and in this drawing I just draw the polynomial part. I ignore the interval, but what I do then is I can construct an interval enclosure of the boundary here. That's the yellow and the green line. It looks like one line here. It's actually two lines, but that tells you how sharp this interval enclosure actually is. It's up to screen resolution here. So using this, we can see the enclosure of the left side is certainly to the left of the left of the blue box, and the other side is to the right of the other box, so we are definitely good on this, and we successfully proved that there's a fixed point. Now this says Cartesian coordinates, that's garbage, that's not Cartesian coordinates, this is eigencoordinates. In Cartesian coordinates, the whole thing is screwed, so you see here we couldn't use the theorem anymore because, first of all, we didn't start out with a box, but with a screwed box, and also up here, this is certainly above the top line here. But that doesn't matter because, again, we can choose whichever coordinate system we want. So if it works in eigencoordinates, we're fine. Now, let me briefly mention the effects of the floating point precision in this operation, because, of course, the Taylor models also suffer from the limited floating point precision. And when we do this, something interesting happens with Taylor models. We actually make our result worse by making a smaller box and sending it to the map. Usually you would expect, well, with interval methods, I make the interval smaller, it gets better. But here this doesn't happen. In fact, let me show you, if we choose a box size of 10 to the minus 10, we get this picture. And now you can actually see that there are two yellow lines here and here, and a green line here and here, which are this time interval enclosures of what looks like a strained boundary here, but there's such a huge interval, error interval, that now suddenly we can't really say anymore where exactly this line should be. It should be somewhere between those yellow lines, but where, we don't really know. So by making the Taylor model smaller, we suddenly fail to verify that there's a fixed point. Now why is that? That has to do with basically we lose expansion order when we make a smaller Taylor model. Now if you look at this, here is the order of the coefficients, and this is roughly the size. Now floating point numbers give you about 15 digits of precision, so each of these bars is about 15 digits long. And beyond that, you don't really know what's going on. There you have your floating point errors, and they just end up in the remainder bound in our Taylor model implementation, and that means from there anything could happen back here. Now, if we use a Taylor model of width 10 to the minus 5, the first coefficient will be about that size. And then you remember Martin mentioned that in Taylor models we expect the coefficients to scale as width to the order. So second order will be 10 to the minus 10, third order 10 to the minus 15. And now you already see the second order still has a significant contribution here. The third order is completely absorbed by this unknown part of the first coefficient. So effectively we're only calculating up to second order, even though when I ran the program I specified up to 10 orders. But that really doesn't happen because Cozy notices that this is, well, Cozy actually keeps it up to 10 to the minus 20, I believe, to be careful, but that means the fourth order would be cut off because it's basically completely within the round-off errors of the constant part of this polynomial. Now, of course, if I use a Taylor model of 10 to the minus 10, you see even the second coefficient is already somewhere around 10 to the minus 20. And that means my effective calculation order here is suddenly only basically 1. And looking at that, you can see why making the Taylor model smaller actually fails to verify the fixed point, because we suddenly don't do a real high order calculation anymore. Instead, it's just a linear case. So we had a few more fixed points we verified of orders 5, 21, 26, and 27. And they're all so tiny that you can't see them. You can look at this on the web if you're interested. You can actually see it on your computer screen. Anyway, just a quick mention of elliptic fixed points. In these maps, you also find elliptic fixed points. There, unfortunately, we can't choose the eigensystem anymore because the eigenvalues are complex. So we need to find some other way to verify that. So far, that I have not implemented. The idea is that we actually construct a special Newton operator, basically, again, like a Newton step in your Newton method. And then we show that this Newton operator has a fixed point. And obviously, if the Newton operator has a fixed point, then just from looking at the operator, you can see that that implies that the original map also has a fixed point. Yep, that's basically what we want to do. Another thing, we once we have that, we want to put it all together and basically build an automatic tool that uses global optimization, basically the COSY global optimizer, to find, classify, and verify all fixed points in a certain area of a certain period, and basically tell you there's a fixed point, there's a fixed point, there's one, and do all that automatically without having someone like me setting all this up and writing it up. All right. So in conclusion, we found several high-order fixed points where we is Sheldon. We were able to verify those points using the fixed point theorems I described before. And one of the problems is we can't tell you very exactly where the fixed point is because we have to use this big Taylor model box with 10 to the minus 5 in width due to the floating point accuracy. Once we have higher precision Taylor models, we can make that smaller and give you a more exact enclosure of this fixed point. And that's it.
Thank you. Any questions?
I was going to say that the first result is actually much better than the second because you have a much tighter enclosure on fixed point. But then you said that. So another question is, assuming that you could change a little bit COSY or anyway the algorithm using there with Taylor models, would it still be a better choice to use a Taylor model to make the proof up to 10 to minus 20 accuracy or something like that, or not?
If we can use Taylor models with a higher precision, then the Taylor models would still be a lot faster, I assume, considering that we had to map 300 million boxes, interval boxes, in the first method. That's a lot, and the Taylor model just needs one Taylor model, so it's basically only one evaluation of the map in Taylor model arithmetic. So even if we use high precision Taylor models and they're slower by a factor of 10, 20, 40, it doesn't matter. It would still be a lot faster than waiting 2 hours for all these boxes to actually be mapped into the original box.
And about the elliptic fixed points, I actually dealt exactly with that problem with a completely different technique that I implemented. I might be interested in that.
Oh, okay.
There are different ways of handling that.
Sure.
Maybe that's more efficient, I don't know. But
well, I haven't tried anything yet, so that's just an idea that this changing the problem.
If you have a rotation, then you can see this browser or shallow or fix this point with
constructs.
And with Taylor model, probably it applies very well too.
Should also work, probably.
Very quickly, yeah, just to the question, the previous one, you mentioned that you've done with the elliptic point. Did you try to do high period ones as well, or was it just test for the elliptic fixed points? You said ways of getting fixed points or periodic points when you have a rotation or something. Did you actually try to implement it with high period?
No.
Oh, okay, just a fixed point problem.
This is a flow though.
Okay. But it's a fixed point problem.
Yeah.
Maybe one other thing. So, ultimately one to find, not only fixed points, but also something like a latent of attraction for it. And so then for that, it's good if you can map big regions. So I mean, obviously, for, you know, where's the fixed point? You want a small enclosure, but if you want to have the attractor already specified, then
But I think we should move to the next talk.